Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown. In this episode, me, Scott, Curtis, and Matt are going to be discussing conditions. It's a strategic conversation that generally revolves around conditions, how to assess their value. It was really awesome. The only caveat I'm going to give is that this episode was a two-parter of one that we recorded last week, and by the time we started, it was pretty late in the evening, and so I'm just going to say that we're a little delirious, and if we make huge glaring errors, you should just blame it on that. Okay, so this episode is going to be releasing on November 27th, Monday, 2023, which is the Monday after Thanksgiving, and I really hope that everyone who is in the United States or is celebrating Thanksgiving had an absolutely glorious, peaceful, joyful holiday with your friends and your family. We were able, so the Saturday after Thanksgiving, I had a glorious Thanksgiving, by the way, but the Saturday after Thanksgiving, I got Scott and some brothers over to play Voidfall. We didn't play any Shatterpoint during the entire week of Thanksgiving, which is crazy, but we played this pretty epic, it's a Euro 4X game called Voidfall that I kickstarted, showed up and we played it, and it was so much fun. So while I didn't play any Shatterpoint, no one played any Shatterpoint, we had a ton of fun anyway. Okay, so for our announcements. First off, Cody is having the tournament on December 16th in Reno, Nevada. It's happening at the Game Castle in Reno, Nevada. Dice roll at 11:30 Pacific. It's a $20 buy-in. And I would very much encourage anyone who is close. I know, actually, if you're in the Bay Area, I don't know how the pass looks right now. I'm not even going to check it. But I think it would be really awesome if we could start getting good turnout to these kind of events. I know it's hard to travel in the winter, and it's, you know, it's December or whatever. But it would be awesome if we could get a good turnout for that. So we have a link for it on the Slack. And also there's a, what's it called? Longshanks link for it. So check it out there. So Christopher Anderson, who is in Sweden, is there. Well, I don't know actually who is hosting this tournament, but there is a DEF CON tournament that is being hosted in, here you go, I am about to massively mispronounce this. Sorry, Swedes. Linköping, Sweden. It's like I'm in an IKEA commercial and I don't know what I'm talking about. So what it is, apparently, is DEF CON. I've done a little bit of research onto this, is a miniatures convention that's happening there. And they are also going to be having a Shatterpoint tournament. But they're not just having one Shatterpoint tournament. They are having two Shatterpoint tournaments. So I think that what they're intending to do is actually host two independent tournaments just to accommodate travel and everything like that. But this looks like it's going to be an awesome event. It's going to be a showdown, not a premier format. But they'll have day one, day two, January 6th and 7th. In Linköping, Sweden. So if you are, and apparently he has said that it is just a train ride away from Denmark. So there you go. What a fascinating modern age we live in. So anyway, we'd really encourage everyone to go. So there you go. We would encourage everyone who is able to make it out to LVO to plan on going and having fun. They're having a casual tournament. I don't honestly know the format for this thing. I think what it's going to be is just mostly a night of casual play, but it should be a ton of fun. I'm going to come and I'm going to bring our promo cards for people who are members of the Slack or people who are signing up for the Slack. I don't honestly know. Right now, what it is that we are going to try and do, in addition to bringing all of the terrain that we're going to be bringing, but that is the thing. If you have told me that you're going to be letting me borrow terrain or you're going to be bringing terrain, if we are going to be the ones who are going to be transporting it, I'm going to be contacting you in order to confirm those details. But I don't think we need more terrain right now. I'm going to kind of do a final inventory and check, but that's just something to keep on your schedule. They don't have any more tickets for the casual event, but I honestly am really unsure as to how strict they're going to be. I mean, if they're having a night of casual play, there's going to be games that are going to be played. I am literally going down. Me and a few of the brothers are going down. I am going to be playing LVO. I might play Armada or X-Wing. Scott will probably play MCP. We will be involved in other games, but we're also just going to be there to hang out and play a ton of board games and just have fun. So there you go. If LVO is on your radar, something to consider. Obviously, we want everyone to rate and review the podcast. Answer the poll question if you are listening on Spotify. For our recent poll, we asked, this was obviously in conjunction with our Thanksgiving episode, we asked, what is your most favorite part about Shatterpoint? And gameplay and strategy won out. Nobody selected the community, so thanks for that. But it was really good. I mean, I think gameplay was what I would have chosen. And list building and What was the other one? Oh, it being a Star Wars game were the other things that were big. One person said that the hobby aspect was their favorite. That's probably Scott. So anyway, there you go. We'd encourage everyone to continue to respond to those poll questions. It's really awesome. It's helping me. I want to have more engagement on that just so I can have a better idea. I need to fashion better questions so that I can drive better engagement in terms of knowing what you guys want to listen to. But anyway. Respond to the poll question. The next set of promos is going out the door tomorrow. We've got a bunch of new people who signed up. I'm going to be sending them out. There is a non-zero chance that I send out a duplicate. I am sorry if you get a duplicate. I'm sure it's worth millions of dollars. Try not to spend it all in one place. And finally, if you are playing games of Shatterpoint, we would encourage you to submit the record for those games on the Zion's Finest Google form that is pinned in the general chat, just so we have a continuing and developing idea as to what's going on. It's not a replacement for Longshanks. If you're also recording your games on Longshanks, that's awesome. But I am, for most of my in-person games, I don't record them on Longshanks. It's really easy to upload the games on the Google form. So that's what I do. So that's it. We hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving and is preparing for an awesome December. Thanks so much, everyone. Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Zion's Finest. This is releasing the week after Thanksgiving, and we hope that everyone had a wonderful, blessed, peaceful Thanksgiving with friends and family. What we are going to be doing in this episode, it's going to be a short one. It is a little after midnight at my house, and we're recording episode 2. Because we love you guys so much, we are doing a twofer, recording 2 in one night. Also, so we don't have to record next week, because we're going to be playing Voidfall. Is what we're going to be doing.
Is that what we're going to be doing? Yes.
Okay. So what we're going to do in this episode is, this is actually something that's gone around. There's actually a really good article that I will find and put a link to that is discussing conditions, the value of conditions, how to think about conditions. Matt, this is actually something Matt has talked about before in terms of assessing their value. And what we want to do here is just give you a strategic paradigm in which to think about When should you be applying particular conditions? When should you be going for damage? That's kind of the idea. So first off, what we're going to do is just give a general, kind of a strategic overview. We're not just going to summarize what they do, but a kind of a strategic overview of what these conditions are doing. And we're going to start with Pin.
Right. So let's talk about Pin a little bit. So Pin, obviously, for those who maybe aren't as familiar, when any time a unit would voluntarily move, be it dash, climb, jump, out of activation move and in activation move, instead of actually moving the figure, you would just remove the pin.
Yep.
So pin is most useful when you want to lock down your opponent from being able to take an action, from like out of activation or in activation. They're not going to get to you to attack. They're not going to get to you for an objective.
Yep.
These often come, a lot of the clone troopers have pins.
Yep.
Handmaidens have pins. The 212 gives that out as their coordinated fire. Pin is, in my opinion, one of the most important, if not the most impactful, of the conditions, because it so universally shuts down what is such a key component
yep.
of the game, which is being able to move your figures around the board to contest objectives.
Absolutely. Especially for melee figures and especially for primary units, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think one of the things about conditions generally is if you look at the recover action that says you can heal, you can remove one damage or one condition.
Yeah.
So the game rules roughly equate each condition to be equal to about a damage. But it's not entirely accurate, because damage does absolutely nothing on the game state until you hit a breakpoint, and then it's huge impact.
Yeah.
Conditions are a little bit more delayed in their impact. I think that because movement is so central to everything that's happening in the game, in terms of contesting objectives, and because out-of-activation movement especially is generally pretty common
yeah.
in the game, pin is the most consistently useful condition in a lot of cases.
Yes.
It is going to limit what that unit does almost always.
Yeah, it feels kind of sad mm-hmm. to pin when you're like, oh, I could be doing more damage or I could be exposing. We're going to talk about when you should think about applying damage versus doing conditions, but pin can just have a devastating impact on your opponent's gameplay.
Pin is especially strong when paired with shoves, because you can displace where somebody is and then pin so they have a hard time following back up to get back into position.
Yes.
Yeah, I will say the opposite end of that spectrum is something like Vader Grievous, outside of Jango, cares less about the pins. Because you don't care if they're on the objective or not, because they're dead.
Yeah, you're just wounded, right?
Sure, absolutely. But it's an interesting thing with certain lists. I came up with this with a game I played with Matt a week and a half ago, where I purposely was not doing damage, and I was opting to load people up with conditions and have them in range of Django's not so fast or whatever that thing is, because that risks losing an activation. If you load someone up with a ton of conditions, that's better than if you wound them, because you wound them, they heal it all, and then they can do their things.
It's better if you don't need to flip an objective they're standing on right now.
Yeah, that's very true. But the idea is if we're depriving someone of an activation is such a huge... It's kind of a death knell. It's really hard to come back from just completely missing out on an activation.
Yeah.
And if you can load up conditions rather than wounding someone,
yeah,
that's huge. And Pin's a big part of that.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Well, I mean, this is something we're going to talk about in a little bit. But I think about this all the time with Dooku's Force Mastery. Because his Force Lightning ability, he has no shoves. Which is super interesting, because that's not how we think of Dooku. We think he's like, you know, Displacement Master. But what he is doing is he's rolling 8 dice, and he can apply all but pin conditions on one, like, step through his tree. And so he's doing, effectively, he can do 7-8 damage if he rolls some expertise, and then he's doing all of the conditions except for pin. And that can be devastating. Like, I did that in our game against Asajj, where it's like, here's all the conditions, and now Asajj isn't doing anything, right, until she's wounded. And so it's just a very... pin can be very valuable. Let's talk about Expose, Matt.
Yeah, Expose is really interesting. I think it's one of the most variable in terms of when it impacts the game.
Yes.
Because you have effects like Coordinated Fire Expose that you have on Arfs and the Night Sisters. And also other effect, the one I'm thinking of is Savage's Dark Force thing that can apply Force conditionally during his activation.
Yeah, Dark Fury.
Thank you. So if you can apply Expose immediately before an attack, what Expose is doing is stripping out those defensive expertise. It's immediately giving you more impact on your attack.
Yep.
That usually is translating into more damage or more conditions.
And also preventing things like movement, like from your opponent, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Ahsoka's jump, reposition.
Dooku's using his expertise to turn your crits into failures. And so it is hugely impactful.
Against figures that are really defensive, like Mace Windu.
Yes.
Or Luminaris, really defensive as well. You drop an Expose on them, and suddenly they become very, very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think to Matt's point, Expose has, in my very variable, because, hey, there are times when, hey, yeah, I rolled, I had an Expose against someone, and I just rolled all blocks.
Yeah.
So it didn't affect me at all. Yeah. But the other times where they rolled all expertise.
Yeah.
So they're, like, very high ceiling, very low floor.
Yeah.
But being able to apply it right before an attack is absolutely the ideal scenario.
Yeah, yeah, well, I mean, and what I meant by variable is less about, like, the dice roll impact and more, if you're applying it before the attack, it's really, really immediate impact.
Yes.
If you are applying it as part of an attack, it is going to impact the game the next time you attack that figure.
Yes.
If you have just wounded them, it's basically worthless.
Yeah.
Right? They're doesn't probably going to clear it when they refresh. Just does not matter.
Yep.
If you are exposing them as the first attack in a two-unit support unit combo that are going for the same target, it can be great because it tees up your next attack.
So exactly.
Depending, its value is very much dependent on what do you need to do to the unit you're attacking and how far into the future do you need to forecast that happening.
Yeah, I also think that the thing with Expose, and I know I've literally already said this, but guys, it's after midnight, and I just want to emphasize this point, is that what Expose does is it changes the math when you're attacking figures like Dooku or Ahsoka or Lumi. Mace is another good example, where they have a lot of agency when you attack them because of what their dice can do and their expertise can do. And Expose can really just change the math on that, and it makes it so you can wound Dooku, right? Mm-hmm. Which is just, it can be really awesome. Okay, Curtis, talk to us about Disarm.
Disarm can be great. It can be next to worthless. I think when you are going to benefit the most from Disarm is hitting primaries with it.
Yeah.
Obviously, they have the best expertise tree.
Yeah.
That's going to make the biggest impact.
Unless you're Magnus.
Unless they are Magnus.
Yeah.
Which...
Magnus are busted.
Magnus are busted.
I will say, in general, using it against a two-unit support is probably when it's at its worst.
Yeah.
Because they will take whoever has the least impactful attack and make that attack with the disarm.
Yeah, and they're just
and then they get their full strength attack on the point that matters when they really need to get those steps through to flip an objective.
Yeah, that's such a great... And the other point you brought up when we were spitballing this is you talked about how if a unit has moved up, if it is activated, disarm doesn't really have a ton of value because it's not clear when this unit's going to be attacking again, right?
That unit might not ever go again. Yeah. You might see zero value from that disarm.
Yeah,
absolutely. Disarm is absolutely situationally devastating for your opponent.
Absolutely.
But it is not as commonly useful.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things comparing Expose and Strain to Disarm and Pin as well Zadisamer and Pin are just less effective with support units.
Yeah.
Who have the ability to move one unit but still get to move the other one. Or attack first, whereas Expose, because they share a health pool...
Oh, that's a good point.
It is, and you're really only attacking a character at a time. Obviously, it's nice because Expose only applies to the first attack, but it still is basically as effective. Same with Strain.
Yeah.
If either of them take an action, they both take the damage.
Yeah, which that is a really good point.
I think speaking on Expose, you get to see the immediate impact that it's making versus the other ones. Has more of an unknown factor. It can depend on order activation. It can depend on what triggering effects they have. Things like that. Versus Expose, you always know what it will do, and it will do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you get to decide when it gets removed most of the time, unless they're healing it.
Yeah.
Whereas your opponent gets to make the decision on removing the other ones.
Yeah.
Great point.
So, I am going to talk about Strain. Now, when we first started playing Shatterpoint, I thought that Strain was the best because it's like, oh, it's free damage, and three damage is three damage, right? And that seems really good, right? That seems the ability to apply a condition where it's like, if you don't get rid of this, you take three damage. But as we have played it more, it has become clear that obviously Strain can be situationally incredibly useful. It's good against Ahsoka. It's good against Dooku, right? It's good against primaries because it really locks down or forces them to think hard about whether or not they're going to be taking damage when they want to do all their out-of-activation stuff. So true. The problem is, though, is that Strain gives your opponent so much agency with respect to when they're going to be taking that damage. And because that is the case, it makes it so that it is, I think, situationally the least useful, right? Situationally, it can be devastating. Yeah. It can absolutely be devastating. But it is very much the case that your opponent can control, or, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of ways your opponent can control when that is going to proc and what consequences they will suffer.
This is an interesting piece to that, I think, because with Pin, you can do an out-of-activation. You can do a tactic, or you could do a dash from Sabotage Showdown with your Shatterpoint to eliminate the Pin, and you go, okay, well, I lost out on that movement, and I'll hopefully make up for it with other movements.
Yeah.
With Expose, I am taking damage. I'm taking extra potential damage. It's more likely that I'll be wounded. With Disarm, I am having to basically not necessarily wound someone or do more poorly on my attack. Strain doesn't prevent you from doing anything unless you're within three of your health pool. Obviously, taking damage is impactful, and it changes the math for your opponent being able to wound you.
Yeah.
But there are times when I've just gone, I'll take the damage.
Yeah.
Because... like, for example, if you have two conditions when you are wounded and you only get to remove one, I actually am more likely to remove Pin, Disarm, or Expose than I am, maybe not Expose, but a lot of times other two, because I want them to have an effective activation.
Yeah.
And taking three damage is not hindering the efficacy of my activation.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah, Strain is at its highest impact. I think there are two basic scenarios.
Yeah.
The first is when there's a unit who has really strong defensive tech.
Yes.
Because that places a tax in damage on them to use that defensive tech.
Yep.
And the goal of the defensive tech is usually to avoid damage, so it creates a catch-22.
Yeah.
The second instance is when you have a unit that is pretty close to being wounded out, it can constrain their actions because they really have to think about, like, oh, do I take the damage in order to do what I want to do during my activation?
Yeah.
And then risk being that my impact is very easily overturned by my opponent.
Yeah.
Or do I say, like, well, I would rather have less impact but a little bit more staying power on the board?
Yeah.
And so I think that it is, in a lot of ways, the most situational situation.
Yeah. I mean it is that's the thing, is so that when you're thinking about it, it might seem initially really cool, but really I would think generally Strain is something that you should not be prioritizing in terms of, like, condition assessment. Okay, so now what we want to do is let's pivot and let's talk about assessing the placement of conditions. And what we're going to do is Matt is going to give us a highlight of the ARFs, because what ARFs do, ARFs are really interesting figures. We think they're obviously very strong, and they are giving you lots of choices with respect to conditions. But what we're really going to talk about now is talking about climbing up their damage tree. When you get to three steps, you have a choice. Matt, tell us, like, how we should be assessing what we should be doing with ARFs, when they're attacking, who they're attacking into. Yeah. Tell us what you think.
So, yeah, just to review, in case you have not obsessively played Republic, like I have, on their tree, the steps run. First step is pin damage.
Yep.
Second step is shove damage.
Yep.
And then it splits exposed damage or disarm damage. And then if you take the exposed damage, there's a final step beyond that, which is 2 damage.
Okay, so let's say you roll and you have 3 steps on your tree. How should we be thinking about who are they attacking? I don't know who they're attacking into, but like, how should we be thinking?
Yeah.
Should we expose? Should we disarm?
Yeah, so it depends. The first question is this your first ARF trooper that's attacking or your second?
Yes.
And what are you doing with your second ARF trooper? If he's attacking the same target, then that expose is great because you will get immediate impact from that right now.
Yep.
If you are double attacking into a single unit, most likely it's because you're really trying to flip a particular point. And so that expose is really, really valuable. If it's your second attack, or if you are just trying to get some chip damage in at range because you don't have anything else to do,
yeah,
the disarm is great because that will have an impact on that unit's next activation.
Yeah.
And really the other thing that you want to be thinking about is, do you think that you are going to be attacking them before they activate again? If they're going to activate sooner than you can cycle back around to impact that unit,
yeah,
then you maybe want to go with that disarm to blunt their impact.
Yeah.
Whereas if you sort of say like, oh, they've already activated, then, and I know that the units left in my deck are likely to be able to want to put pressure on this same part of the map, then expose suddenly is much more valuable.
That's a really good point. You know something that was interesting, Matt, is in our game, when I set up Dooku in a certain place, and you're like, okay, I'm just like not going that way, right? Uh-huh. And I could tell like you were really trying to apply pressure. So Matt was playing Datho Sisters, right?
Yep.
And you got incredible value out of their expose. Let's talk about coordinated. Actually, let's just talk about coordinated fire.
Yeah.
Okay, so coordinated fire, we are getting it on the Republic, and we are getting on the Datho Sisters, and we're getting Enfeeble from Fifth Brother and
Fourth Sister.
What is Fifth Brother is giving an expose, Fourth Sister is giving a
pin.
Okay, so like those are really good.
Yep.
So when are they all range 5?
Enfeeble is range 4. All coordinated fire is range
5.
And we also have the Handmaidens giving disarm from the Handmaidens, a dash for Sabe.
Yes.
And 2 damage for
from Padme,
which is wild value. Sabe's is actually super interesting, and we should talk about that. But so coordinated fire is really interesting because it really rewards positioning and careful setup, okay? Which is kind of a problem with Republic because Republic are so, their activation sequencing is so fragile. But it is also the case that it just gives you, Matt has talked about this a bunch, where it just gives you the ability to win these attrition. You're winning on value, right?
Yeah. It is less, like, it is consistent value that you don't have to pay for unless you've gotten wounded.
Yes.
And then you have to really judiciously decide when is it useful and when is it not.
Yes.
And the game that Republic is especially is playing, because they are the faction that is the most built around coordinated fire,
yes,
is how do I squeeze as much value out of this as possible? So they're trying to maximize range, maximize impact, and maximize how many times they get to trigger it for free.
Yeah, that's a great point. And because the idea there is that, so ARFs are giving expose as their coordinated fire, which is so strong.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is so strong because
expose on a coordinated fire at range 5.
Oh, like, it's so good.
Especially on Sabotage Showdown, where the map is, the points are a little bit closer together.
Yeah.
If you are careful with your positioning and if you're sequencing properly, you can get that most of the time.
Yeah. And what's crazy is that you're giving out all these free exposes, which is really increasing the damage, which is exactly what Republic needs, right? I mean, their primaries are super strong, but Mace or Anakin hitting an exposed target, man, I mean, they're going to wound them, right? Like, absolutely. They are very likely to wound them.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about the coordinated fires, the Maul's pull,
getting
to give someone an expose right before you attack them.
So good.
And just the immediate consistent value. That it's possible an expose completely whiffs and that your opponent didn't roll any expertise.
Yeah.
Which oftentimes if they didn't roll any expertise is most of the time probably not a big deal for you.
Yeah.
Sure, they might have been rolling blocks, but sometimes those expertise, especially for certain people, is, well, I'm gonna take that crit you had and I'm gonna turn it into a failure. Regular hit or a failure.
Yep.
Or
great point.
As we've talked about, I'm gonna get to jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Savage is also really interesting to talk about with his Dark Fury.
Yeah.
Because that is a 2 force power ability. And it is expensive to do, and it's basically just not so fast.
Yeah,
It's
not so fast, but worse.
But worse. I mean, it does damage while during your activation when you're trying to attack somebody.
Yes,
which can be really impactful.
Yeah,
I think the trap that can happen a lot with Dark Fury is that you see, oh, if it's a Force user and I deal damage, then they get the expose, and so I want to pay for that up front.
Yeah,
And I think the reality is that more often than not with that ability, that 2 force is the ripcord that you pull if your attack whiffs, yeah. and you know that you just need, you know, 2 more damage to get to the wound.
Yep.
I think that in most cases, the expose is not giving you enough value there.
Yeah.
The other thing is that if you spike and get to 5 steps on the tree, then you can do it for free anyway.
Yeah, it's a great one.
And so part of what you are looking at is sometimes you get more value or just don't have to spend it if you are looking at it. I think that often the way that you are trying to leverage that is if you are trying to get to a breakpoint that otherwise seems very possible, but you just want more consistency. If you're trying to do 6 damage against yeah. a difficult to wound target, or if you're trying to do 8 damage, then you sort of say, okay, in order to get there, I think I need to do the Dark Fury first to just give a little bit of boost.
Yeah.
But if you're sort of trying to live the dream and say, oh, I can do 9 damage from his attack and then 2 more and I can one-shot Mace Windu,
yeah.
like, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Give up on the dream, make the attack, and see what happens, yeah. right?
100%. Also, here's what I want to talk about, because we're actually going to talk about Savage here in a second, but what I want to talk about actually is, so 212th are garbage units, okay? However, they have something really strong, which is their coordinated fire is pin.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's literally their only good thing,
yep.
right? And so much the case that I think Republic Commandos are a better unit in a lot of ways, but Republic Commandos, their coordinated fire is damage, which is cool, and mm-hmm. adding damage is awesome. It's not as good as Expose. Expose yep. is most of the time, going to translate into 2 to 3 damage, and also it's going to prevent, you know, defensive movement shenanigans. Mm-hmm. Damage is awesome, but I would much rather have my coordinated fire be pin than damage, right?
Yep.
And also, Republic Commandos don't have a shove. So it's really interesting to me that these 212, that are otherwise a pretty terrible unit, have this really strong ability, right? And then the question is just, can you leverage it, right?
Well, and I even think that the pin is kind of questionable value, because in the context of Republic, what you see is that you have these primaries and secondaries that hit really hard
yeah.
and are really great at contesting centerline points.
Okay.
And the supports are really fragile, and they do okay damage from range, but they provide value from coordinated fire. And their job is just kind of stand on the back lines and give you a little bit extra value.
Yeah.
And often what happens is that the pin is just not, there's not a lot of added value going into. Like, if Mace Windu is making an attack,
yeah,
right, he can push people on his one side, he can just do tons of damage on the other.
Yes.
In those contexts, the pin is not doing a ton of work. Whereas if you compare to something like the Clan Kreese Mandalorians who have pin in their tree,
yeah.
where they're pin into shove.
Yeah.
Like, those kinds of effects are a little bit more powerful, because Clan Kreese is never trying to wound somebody. They're just trying to push somebody off yeah. a point and keep them off.
Yeah, 100%.
And when you're talking with a primary, especially in Galactic Republic, the pin is often such questionable value that it's just hard to leverage them. And then the units are difficult enough to leverage when they activate that it's tricky.
Okay.
Whereas you compare to ARF troopers,
yeah.
the expose is adding a ton of extra consistency to those attacks, so yep. you can just wound people out.
Yeah.
The clone commandos +1 damage, I think, is that can add up substantially over time. And so I think those coordinated fires just play a little bit more naturally
yeah.
into what you want, what kind of value you want to be getting from coordinated fire.
Yeah. The interesting thing when you bring up the coordinated fire +1 damage, it absolutely can build up. I've seen you do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if they already have the condition, then their coordinated fire also becomes +1
absolutely.
Damage.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so there are times when it becomes, I only need 1 damage. Yeah. You're already exposed. I'll just attack you and yeah. guarantee it.
Good point.
Most
good
of the time, this game is pretty good about, I only have to do a little bit of damage and I'm generally going to do it. Unless you're Curtis in the last game we played together. In which case, he needed to do... 3 damage to Fifth Brother, and he did 3 damage, but that was before protection.
Yeah.
Yep, the worst.
I think that the other piece is that coordinated fire pin, or pin from an attack generally, is primarily only valuable to apply to a unit that is out, who has been displaced from where they want to be.
Yes, yes.
Whereas the other ones help you to actually displace a unit.
Yeah, expose,
that,
right?
Yeah, expose does that. The coordinated fire pin primarily just says, if you can do that, here's a little bit of extra bonus that makes it harder for them to get back on there.
Man.
And the reality is that, like, not every unit has access to shoves early on the tree.
Yeah.
For some reason, Magna Guards do. But yeah. but you know, most Magna Guards, units aren't don't have that.
Magna Guards don't have a pin.
Yeah. Thank heavens.
Yeah, all they have is two shoves, two shoves and a reposition.
Yep. Three shoves and four steps.
That's exactly right.
I think it's interesting to think about damage versus conditions.
Yeah.
When do you go for damage? When do you go for conditions? And certain conditions are serving you for damage, whereas other conditions are not.
Yeah.
Because the obvious thing is, we want to be taking objectives.
Yes.
If you're not taking objectives, you're missing the entire point of the game.
Yep.
And the ways to do that is you wound other people there or you kick them off.
Yep.
Right? So, Matt, when you bring up the idea of, well, pin is best done when we're pushing people off.
Because you're like, displacing them. They're not where they want to be and you can't move.
Right? But expose sort of serves both functions, yes. Right? Because you're just asking for successes and maybe those successes are to push someone off. Maybe it's to wound them.
Yeah.
And so either function works, but I think about, again, to kind of give an example in a lot of things, with Imperial Assault,
yeah,
or with Warhammer, or with a lot of mini wargame, MCP, especially MCP, there's a lot of sort of tempo management,
yeah,
and activation deprivation.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, we're all going to go in a round.
Yes.
I know you have this person left to go, and these person haven't gone yet. So if I attack the person that's gone, well, you know, that's middling value, right? I might need to get something from them, or I might be hurting them later to,
yeah,
set them up. But generally speaking, it's not as important. But if I wound this person,
yeah,
you get one fewer turn.
Yeah.
Whereas here in this game, that is not the case.
Yeah, it's not how it works.
It is not at all how it works. And so there have been times when I've just said, well, why am I wounding this person? Obviously,
yeah,
that gives you momentum.
Yes.
But if they're not contesting anything, if you're already contesting the point, and,
yeah,
and it's okay if you have, if you know you're going to win the struggle,
yeah,
and you can just put damage on them, put damage on them.
Sure.
Yeah. The other thing that I think where conditions can really play in is it depends a lot on where your strength is situated within the context of the struggle. As an example, I have at times opted not to wound units, but to leave them one or two damage short, pinned and disarmed.
Yeah.
Because what that means is the next time they activate,
they are a sad panda.
They are, that is a really, yeah, wasted activation.
Yeah.
And anything that they do, all you need is two damage to then wound them and undo it.
Yeah.
And so if you don't think that you need the impact of the wound, this activation, maybe you're already ahead on scoring, you can slow down the pace of how you're winning to try to sort of forecast that impact in,
yeah,
the future.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the victim of your own success. That's what happened in our game, right? Obviously, there is the Django component,
yeah,
there where, mm-hmm, you're...
Pew, 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 pew.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just the idea that sometimes wounding is not as useful as shutting down their next activation.
Absolutely.
And conditions are a really effective way of,
yeah,
doing that.
Yeah.
Or just... You know, it is very, very rare that you actually fully remove units in the game from the board.
Yeah.
And so often what you were looking for is teeing it up so that they are close to a breakpoint, so that when you need to hit that breakpoint, it's easy for you in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Conditions are depriving your opponent of value on their activation if you are able to stack them in a way that... Yeah. And like, so here's an example. So Savage Opress, he has 5 steps on his tree. His bottom steps, in 4 steps, he is doing 8 damage. In his top step, he's only doing 5 damage, but he's doing three conditions except for pin. The question is, if you have 4 successes, and let's say you're not going to wound, what do you do? And I think a lot of times with the primary, it sounds kind of crazy, but you should do the top tree. Apply those 3 conditions. And then like what we're saying, it feels bad. I mean, one is Savage doesn't have a push, so he's a moron. But like the thing is that it feels bad to not wound. But really, you can just put so much weight,
yeah,
on their activation. Like Scott's saying, like, activation deprivation breaks backs, and it will ruin games, right?
But again, it also depends, right?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
If you're in Struggle 2 or in Struggle 3, where there are only 3 objectives,
okay, sure, yeah,
and the whole game, like, the game is turned into, we are fighting over the middle one.
Yes.
And the unit has already activated.
Yes.
Then you're sort of like, okay, I would rather have the damage. So
absolutely.
That, because then my next activation can just actually wound them and deal with them.
That's a great point.
Whereas if you're like, oh, they have 2 cards in their deck.
Yeah.
And one of them is this guy and the other one is their Shatterpoint.
Yeah.
I can cripple what that unit can do,
yep,
and limit their options.
Yeah, this is like, yeah, what Curtis was saying in terms of like assessing,
yeah,
have they gone? Disarm is probably not as value, right?
Exactly.
Like how many times are they going
to
go again?
This goes to the fundamental piece of strategy of any competitive game, is you want to limit your opponent's choices
yep.
in as many ways as possible so that they're not choosing between a good idea and a better idea. They're choosing between a bad idea and an equally bad idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or in my case, I'm choosing between the best idea and then considering three alternative paths before realizing they're not so good and I go back to the best idea.
Yeah. Yes. Here's the other thing is, and let's close with this. Is that I think that there are certain conditions, and I think this is primarily focused around coordinated fire, that you can really build lists around. So I think ARFs expose, I think mostly we're talking about expose, and we're talking about ARFs expose and Night Sisters expose. Because what that does is that adds so much consistency to your attacks in these units that maybe otherwise they don't have Vader power, right? But you're still being able to add a lot of consistency. And you, what you should be thinking is if you're running Night Sisters is how are you maximizing the value of expose, of coordinated fire in a way that isn't, because you don't want to be paying force to do it, but you want to be getting as much value out of it as possible. Yeah. So how can you protect them and also keep them forward so that you are getting most value out of that?
Yeah, to draw a comparison to other games, in a lot of games, more dice just means more damage.
Yeah.
And you get consistency through things like rerolls and other stuff. Rerolls are super rare in Shatterpoint. And because of the nature of how attack trees work, really, more dice means more consistency.
Yes.
Yeah. And expose adds more consistency. It can add more damage.
Yeah.
But because you're going farther on the tree.
But really, often what you are looking for is less, oh, I need to figure out a way to max out my tree. And it's more like, I need to hit 3 steps or I need to hit 4 steps. How do I optimize my chances to do that?
It is the case that an ARF trooper rolling 7 dice and an ARF trooper rolling 20 dice can do the exact same amount of damage.
That's a great point, actually.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a great point. One other thing I thought about, which is something that there isn't a ton of in the game, is resistance to conditions. Mm-hmm. So the big one is OB2 can't be exposed. And that is a huge deal.
And he heals.
He heals.
So it is not just, oh, well, that won't work. It's, I'm giving you a benefit if I do it.
Yeah, because I guess if they're going up their tree, they have to give you the exposed condition.
Yeah.
Right? Ooh, that's...
I mean, depending on the tree, if you have a choice, you have a choice.
Yeah. But if you don't have a choice, yes. Right? Like, are there other units that are resistant
to
conditions?
There is going to be another unit. I do not remember. It is in the Spoiled.
Okay.
It's either among the Ewoks, or maybe it's one of the new ones. It has an immunity to, I believe, a new condition.
And there's also, so this is actually something that Luke is immune, or so we're going to pull this up. We're doing this on the fly because we love you all. So Luke, when this unit is in the order deck or in reserve, he has immunity to expose. And while this unit's order card is not in the order deck, he has immunity to pin.
Yes.
So Luke is, that's a really cool thing. This is something that Sam is super sweet on with Luke, is because when he's in your order deck, he can't be exposed. And when he's out of your order deck, he can no longer be pinned. So it just makes it so that Luke just becomes this like really interesting figure in terms of, you know, the activation sequencing and the timing of it. The reason I'm bringing this up is because things like Steadfast are not really a resistance to pin, but they kind of are, because you need to be able to resist that initial push pin, right? And so you want units with Steadfast, OB2, you want to be able to mitigate healing, actually. So like Lumi's healing, right? Or Ahsoka being able to heal. These out-of-activation heals that you're not really having to pay actions for can really help you mitigate some of the downsides of these things. But anyway, that was just something I was thinking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, recover and heal is especially interesting because of the way that it works on a range basis.
Yeah.
You can really cheat out some things where a condition that would otherwise be limiting, you can just deal with.
Yeah, 100%.
Similar, like, pin conditionally, you just, if you get a free movement somewhere, sometimes the best choice is like, well, I just clear that pin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, I'll take it. All right, well, that's our thoughts. I mean, I've been learning a lot about conditions in terms of like thinking about how to assess them and not just wanting to go straight damage all the time. Yeah. I think if there is one thing that has become most clear to me in terms of the value, it is push pin, right? Yeah, push pin is the best steps in the game.
I mean,
right?
The entire game is about how do I get my opponents away from the objectives and how do I keep them away from the objectives.
Yeah,
and push pin is the simplest way to do that.
Yep. And so,
barring that, murder them.
Yeah, exactly. Or just kill them, right?
That might be the simplest way.
You're right. Good point. Vader Grievous has a different approach. Yeah. Clan Kreese is like, oh, we'll push pin. Vader's like, oh, I'll just kill him. All right. Well, anyway.
You can't dash if they're dead.
That's true. It doesn't matter.
You dodge dead. A wrench? No, you didn't dodge the wrench. You're dead.
Yeah, you're dead. Yeah, it's an excellent point. I mean, in our game, Matt, in our game that we played, all of my units were wounded. So it's like, except for Lumi. So it's like, I could dash someone. It doesn't matter. Right? They're all dead. So that was a really interesting game.
Yell at us about conditions on the Slack.
That's exactly right. Oh, also, I am going to put a link in the show notes to that article, which was really good and kind of helped initially form my thoughts on this. So
one, I guess, last call out, because I was playing around with this just today.
Yeah.
Bombad Tactics has put together a dice odds calculator on their website, and it will pull in data specifically for you. Can say this unit in this stance is attacking this other unit in that stance. We just shared in the Slack recently, but if you play around with it, you can actually really visualize what these different effects do.
That's cool.
You can look and say, okay, you know, if I add expose, my odds of hitting, you know, four steps go from 60% to 80%.
That is exactly what I want.
And you can visualize the actual direct impact of that in a game that is generally pretty hard to see those kinds of visualizations, because even though the dice are the same for every single unit, expertise are different.
Oh yeah.
And the trees are different.
Yep.
And so every unit kind of has its own special attack suite that you have to get a feel for.
100%. Yeah. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. Okay, everyone, we love you. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Let's all get ready for Christmas. Talk to you later.